Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Follow Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Yep. About 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. And we're not playing any St. Patrick's Day shows.
Because Why Carl, not, Lisa?
Because Carl's bitter.
Why?
Because you don't like
You're
St. Patrick's
You're the one that picks
Day.
Out all the shows.
I know, but we have a process.
We should have had a Duffy's Tavern
effort.
Radio
that
show
That would have been
something.
A great idea. The least you could have done
not
is worn
good.
Green. That's all,
right.
all I'm
well,
saying.
Well, we have Philip Marlowe.
Okay, it's close.
We have Jack Benny.
So close.
And we have Crime Classics on this edition.
You know, it's all the same thing.
The gal to my right over here is Lisa Wolf. The gal in the booth is Shantae Garth. And you are not wearing green.
And I'm wearing a green sweatshirt.
No, it is teal.
It's
it is
green.
Absolutely
We're,
not green.
You know
green.
What? I'm going to post a picture of me wearing my sweatshirt.
It's not and, green, folks.
And it's green.
It is not green.
The security guard, two security guards here at
they
the Tribune Tower
nice.
Said green.
They were being nice.
Well, of course they were, but
all
it's
right.
green.
Well, we're going to play our game.
Yeah.
What is it?
Crack the quote.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay,
what movie
the
is
movie
it?
Is The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Never saw it.
I know, that's why I picked it.
All right, what do they win?
They're going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling.
All right, that's a good prize.
It's a great prize.
Very good prize. All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200. Call right now. Play the game with us, 312-981-7200. We'll find our player right after these words.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Tony on the line to play with us. Hey, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, Lisa?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Hi, Tony.
I'm doing great. Hey, Carl. How
Good.
You doing?
Good, buddy.
We're glad you're with us, and we're glad you're going to play the game. The movie is The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Have you seen it?
I have, but I've been a long time.
I hear you. Well, maybe Carl will be a really big help for you. He's usually really helpful. So,
okay,
all right.
So.
Okay. I was being a little sarcastic on that one. Okay, here's your three quotes. Number one, I wish it need not have happened in my time. Number two, time you enjoy wasting is not wasted time. And quote number three, all we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us.
Hmm.
I think maybe number three.
Number three. Mm. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that's given to us.
Mm.
What do you think, Carl?
I'm going to go with number one.
I wish it need not have happened in my time. All right, let's hear it.
All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us.
So he got it. You got it, Tony.
So Tony got it right.
Yes, he did. Good job.
Way
you
to go,
knew it.
Tony.
You are a winner, and you have won the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-minute men. So congratulations. Thank you so much
Way
for playing.
To
See,
go,
you knew
Tony.
More than you thought you did.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Tony,
thank you.
Real quick, before we let you go, I have a question for you. Why can't you borrow money from a leprechaun? You know why?
I don't know.
They're always a little short.
That's good, Carl.
Thanks, Tony.
That's why I can't borrow money
joke.
From you, Carl.
That's true. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you. Enjoy your prize.
Take care.
All righty. It is time, Lisa, for our first classic radio show. It's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But you had a text you wanted to read,
you
right?
You know, we had this great text. Thank you so much. This person said that Jack Benny has Dennis Day. A fine Irish singer for St. Patrick's Day.
That's true.
So we've got the day covered. So
there
thank
we
you.
Go.
See, we knew we had
lucked
it right.
Out.
That's right.
All right. Adventures of Philip Marlowe came to radio in 1949, starred Gerald Moore as Raymond Chandler's tough Private Eye. It was one of the best detective shows on the radio, and we have an episode for you right now. But don't forget, text us because we want to keep Lisa up. She didn't get a nap in today. 312-981-7200. That's our text in line. If you have any questions about the show, we'll be happy to answer them for you while we tune in to part one now of The Deep Shadow. From March 21st, 1950, here is the first portion of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. This time a bride-to-be, a corpse in a plush bungalow and a southern drawl behind a gun all had one thing in common. They moved through the same deep shadow. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in... The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Deep Shadow.
Hello.
Mr. Philip Marlowe, please.
This is Marlowe.
Oh, my name is Harvey Kettering, and I'm to be married in 4 hours at 9 sharp.
Well, congratulations. I hope you'll be very happy.
But my bride is gone. Disappeared. I need your help.
Now, look, if you've been left waiting at the altar, I can't...
Oh, no, it's nothing like that. She's in trouble, Mr. Marlowe, I'm sure.
No?
Shirley loves me. Now, I'll pay anything you say, 200, 300, anything, only get out here fast, please.
Now, wait a minute. Where is here?
3840 Sunswept Drive. It's in Studio City, just across the hills from Hollywood.
38.
Take Laurel Canyon.
Well, now, look, Mr. Kettering,
please, Mr. Marlowe, please.
Okay. All right, Mr. Kettering, I'll see you. The address he gave me turned out to be a healthy chunk of old Spain. A whitewashed house that spread out for at least 100 yards under a pink-tiled roof. As admitted by a butler with owl eyes, no shoulders, and a small bay window, and we... played follow the leader over cool marble ankle-deep Persian rug and inlaid Philippine mahogany. Finally, I was ushered into the ballroom, which was big enough for a highlight match. It was decked out for a wedding, from the champagne buckets and dead-over-ice lobsters to a pink rose-covered canopy at the center. And in the middle of it all, chain smoking while he worried, was my new client, Harvey Kettering.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, I'm afraid there isn't a moment to lose, so I'd better tell you what I know, quickly. But let's step outside on the patio.
All right, Mr. Kettering.
Mr. Marlowe, last night, Shirley and I...
What's her full name, Mr. Kettering?
Doyle, Shirley Doyle. Oh, yes, here. Here's a snapshot of her.
Mm-hmm.
She's 25, blonde, and as you can see, Mr. Marlowe, very attractive.
Yes, so right. You started to tell me about last night.
Oh, yes. We were out together at a nightclub, the Blue Chip.
On Ventura Boulevard?
Oh, yes. Now, we'd never been there before, yet I think that's where it started.
What do you mean, started?
Well, when we were leaving the place about midnight, I called a cab. I was just giving the driver Shirley's home address, the Moore Park Court Apartments, when suddenly she told me to get in and told the driver to start at once.
You know why?
No, I thought perhaps she'd seen somebody coming from the club. But when I asked her about it, she said it was just her nerves, since tomorrow was her wedding day.
I see.
Then today she was supposed to call, but she didn't. At 2, I called her.
Talk to her?
No, she was gone. But I talked to the day maid. She said when she arrived, she... brought in a note that had been left outside Shirley's door. There's one of those leave-a-message pads in a box on her porch rail.
Mm-hmm.
She said it seemed to upset Shirley terribly. Mr. Marlowe, what are we going to do?
Well, now, look, have you been over there to Shirley's place?
No, I haven't.
Got a key?
Yes, I do.
All right, Mr. Kettering, you have the key, so let's go.
But what shall I do about the guests, the
men? Nothing right now. We may be lucky.
There are only 3 rooms, Mr. Marlowe. What do you suggest we do?
Well, first, let's look for that note. She may have left it here somewhere. Now, you try the bedroom. I'll start with the wastebasket. Full of papers.
All right. Just as you say, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, sure. Endicott Clinic. 321 North Roswell. Kettering, what does Shirley do for a living?
Well, she was a receptionist, Mr. Marlowe, at a medical clinic on Roswell.
Well, that figures.
Mr. Marlowe.
What?
Mr. Marlowe, I found it. The note the maid spoke of, it's the same paper written with a soft pencil like the one attached to that box outside. It was on her dresser.
Give it here. Let's see it. Dear Shirley Doyle, guess who I ran into last night? Francis Dragato. Suggest you meet me at the corner of Ventura and Whitsitt Boulevard at 10:30. Not signed, huh?
Is Francis spelled with an E?
Yeah, the girl's name.
I've never heard Shirley mention any Francis Dragato.
Mm.
And a public street corner wouldn't be much of a place to check 5 hours after people met, would it, Mr. Marlowe?
No, I suppose not.
Mr. Marlowe, what have you got? What is it?
Hmm? Oh, a page torn out of the classified directory, a listing of theatrical agencies. Line through by pencil from A down to C. Well,
the last one crossed out is Capital Artists.
Yeah, that makes Drake Talent Agency next.
Well, she never had anything to do with show business, Mr. Marlowe. What do you think it means?
I don't know.
You going to check with the Drake Agency?
No, my first stop's going to be where you were last night, the Blue Chip. I know the owner, Eddie Shaft, and Eddie knows an awful lot, including things that aren't always exactly his business. Maybe able to help us if he wants to.
Shall I come along, Mr. Marlowe?
No, you go home kittering. I'll try to deliver your bride before 9.
All right. Shall I pay you now?
Now we'll let it go, COD. I haven't the slightest idea what I'm going to run into. The snapshot of Shirley Doyle my client had given me reminded me of the kid you went to school with. You know, she had the kind of well-scrubbed look you knew was quick to smile, but I knew that she could be in a lot of trouble if she was tied in at all with the dapper Eddie Shaft. After dark, the Blue Chip was one of those cozy, soft lights melting on thick drapes kind of places. It made you forget all about the stiff prices for limp food. But now, at a little better than 5 in the afternoon, under wide-eyed, unblinking work lights, that all the cushion come hither of a union hall. In one corner, a skinny musician with a golf ball complexion was working over a clarinet. While in the middle of a dance floor with no more diameter than the hole in a candy lifesaver, a girl was standing on a piano stool. She was smoking and looking straight ahead at nothing. Her red shingled hair, promise of a nose and plunged neckline tagged her as the singer on the posters outside. One Miss Corky Netherlands.
The place is closed, soldier.
Glad you told me. Never would have known.
Never mind the routine, soldier. Just come to the point. What do you want?
Just a few words with the boss. Eddie around?
No, he's not.
Uh-huh. How about his bungalow in Coldwater Canyon?
You mean it hasn't hit the papers yet?
What's the connection between Eddie and the headlines?
Soldier, Eddie was stabbed to death sometime this morning.
You gotta be kidding.
Sometime between 9 and 11, the cops say. Well, so long, sir.
Hey, wait a minute, Corky. You have any idea who did it?
No. Except that maybe it was a dame.
Any description on her?
The law isn't gabby about things, soldier, believe me. If you don't, try Eddie's bungalow yourself and find out.
Hustle up, will you? Oh, yeah, and Mooney, don't forget to have that fingerprint crew go over his other car on that back porch rail.
Okay, Lieutenant. Hey, can they start the body downtown now?
Yeah, I guess so. We're not going to get any smarter staring at
it. Hiya, Matthews.
Huh? Oh, hello, Phil. What brings you up here?
Curiosity. I was in the neighborhood. What's the setup? I hear it's supposed to be a woman.
Could be. Where do you hear this?
Singer over at the Blue Chip, Corky Netherlands.
Oh, her. Yeah, well, she's clear. She was home right up until noon, and she can prove it.
Mm-hmm.
This happened a little before noon, an hour or so. But it was a woman, all right.
What makes you so sure?
Oh, Phil, fresh lipstick on a glass and a cigarette, a kitchen knife for a murder weapon, etc.
No.
Also, some long-nosed neighbor saw a girl. Said she was young, maybe blonde. She wasn't sure. Saw her run out of here a little after 11 this morning.
Mm-hmm. All this adds up to somebody in particular, huh?
Well, it should, Phil. Norma Mayetta.
Who?
Norma Mayetta is her name. She was Eddie's dearest, you see. It should add, but it doesn't. She left town last night for Chicago in the 1 a.m. plane. We checked it. Of course, Eddie Shaft went with a lot of girls.
Excuse me,
that's so right.
We just got hold of that night cashier over at the Blue Chip.
Yeah, what'd he say, Mooney?
Shaft took $50,000 in small bills out of the office safe last night.
Oh, what time?
About 2 a.m. Had it in a large manila envelope.
Yeah, nothing even close to manila envelopes turned up here, has it?
No, Lieutenant, but that gives us another angle to shoot at.
All right, Mooney, pass the word to the boys.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Look, Marlowe, just a passing thought.
All right.
You sure you're just curious? You sure you don't want to play one and one makes two with me?
Yeah, I'm sure, Lieutenant. Well, look, I'll see. I'll give you a call.
Carlo,
if I... Huh?
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
Look, I know all about your professional ethics, you know, relations between client and private detective. Yeah. We won't go into that. We're going to go into something else very briefly, Phil. You know, the law on many points is quite clear, Marlowe.
Clear like what, Matthews?
Clear like the status of an accessory before or after the fact in a murder case. And like aiding and abetting a criminal. Like a lot of things you know all about, Phil. Keep them in mind, will you?
Okay, Matthews. Yeah, I'll see you. Since the lieutenant hadn't mentioned Francis Dragato, I didn't see why I should. All of which made it a good time for me to cross my fingers and check the name which had been on deck on the list in Shirley's apartment. The Drake Talent Agency. The place, which was on Sunset Strip, was strictly coy colonial, from a miniature Mount Vernon front to an oversized mirror-polished brass knocker on the front door that said my tie was crooked. And I was sure that the gentleman who answered the door noticed it. He was impeccable. In cocoa brown gabardine, white high-at-the-throat tab shirt, and also cocoa brown silk tie. And at the bottom there were thick-soled cordovans with leather laces. At the top, a crew cut over jet-black horn rims. He took the glasses off, and long, soft fingers toyed with one stem while he talked.
Yes, sir?
Now, my name is Philip Marlowe. I'd like to talk to Mr. Drake.
I'm Mr. Drake.
Oh?
What was it you wanted, Mr. Marlowe?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. You see, Drake, this picture here is Corky Netherlands, right?
The third one over, yes. She's a client of ours. But this picture isn't what you came to talk about, is it, Mr. Marlowe?
What's her home address?
I beg your pardon.
Come on, quick. It's important.
And confidential. This isn't a Lonely Hearts Club, Mr. Marlowe.
I was playing a long shot when I knocked on your door, Drake, but now it's paid off, so tell me. Any stranger call for Corky's address today?
I don't know, and the secretary's already left. Look here, Mr. Marlowe, what's this all about?
Murder, Mr. Drake.
Murder?
A messy one. Now, do you give me the address, or do I start after it myself?
Well, I don't know.
Come on, answer up, Drake.
The Towers, an apartment hotel on Ivar.
Now, one last thing. Don't call her after I leave unless you want to be up to your hand-stitched lapels and cops.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe.
Yeah, second act coming up.
All right, you took your job. You need to say nothing. We need you for nothing, Carl.
Man, oh man. All right, that's the first portion of The Deep Shadow on the Adventures of Philip Marlowe. More coming your way after these words. All right, it's 11:32 in the evening. And we're going to go to news here in just a second. When we come back, it's the conclusion to Philip Marlowe, then the Jack Benny program, then Crime Classics. But I have a question for Dave. Dave, are you there, sir?
Yeah.
I just would like to know, what do ghosts drink on St. Patrick's Day?
I have no idea, but you're going to tell me.
Yes, ghosts drink booze.
Ba-dum-bum.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're listening to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. This is from March 21st, 1950. It's called The Deep Shadow, and it stars Gerald Moore. Here's the conclusion of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Deep Shadow.
I left the glossy Mr. Drake and his glossy little agency with his mouth hanging open and drove down to Hollywood Boulevard to Ivar and from there up the hill to a five-story air-conditioned monolith with Venetian blinds called The Towers, which offered about as much sanctuary as the Yankee Stadium. I parked, heading downhill, and walked in across the buzzing green and silver lobby draped with pale pink curtains and blasé women to the elevator and rode up to the third floor. Corky Netherlands' apartment was the fourth down the hall to the right, and quiet, but the door was ajar 2 inches. So I rapped hard enough to swing it all the way open. The answer sounded like a cry for help from the bottom of a well. When it came again, I went in, and it took me a few seconds to realize that the noise was coming from a closet. When I got it open, Corky Netherlands reeled out, looking like she'd been through a threshing machine.
She was here. She was after after the money.
Who's after what money, Corky? Who?
Some dame, I didn't know her, but she... There she is.
Shirley! Miss Doyle, wait a minute!
It was Shirley Doyle. She'd been hiding inside near the door. She grabbed the handy oversized ashtray and let it fly at us, then beat it. I made it to the hall just as the elevator door closed, so I took the stairs and raced it down to the lobby. I got out on the street in time to see Shirley with a large manila envelope in one hand pile into a sleek new Hudson and take off. I ran to my car to follow her, but that was as far as I got. I was stopped cold by a nasty little gut in the hands of a southern accent behind a pair of strictly Hollywood dark glasses.
Be a good boy, honey, and hold it.
Now, look, right sister, there. Who do you think you are?
Now,
what are you...
I'll ask the questions if you don't mind. Why are you in such a fuss over the girl who just made off
this? I was trying to get her out of a jam, believe it or not.
Well, now, isn't that the darndest coincidence you ever saw? So am I. Only you want to catch her, and I want her to get away. But I guess that's life, isn't it, honey?
Yeah, in the raw.
You said it. We got big business together, her and me. And it sure don't include you.
Just a minute. This adds like you could be Francis Dragato.
Francis who?
Dragato.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, that name's much too fancy for the likes of me, honey. I reckon we can break it up now. So why don't you just give me the keys there in your hand?
My keys?
Come on, Gil.
Yeah, well...
That's a good boy. Now, don't try anything silly. And, don't fret, honey. I'll leave your car 2 or 3 blocks down the street here. Look, maybe you ought to go back upstairs and console little sugar child up there. Maybe take her to a movie or something. You know, to cool her off.
Well, that's a nice, fresh thought.
I'm loaded with
it. Yeah, you're
try
loaded.
Try me again sometime. So long.
Dames. Someday I'm going to get a case where there's no dames connected. Either directly or indirectly. Parking my car 3 blocks away, that's fine, fine. Just fine. Hey, going up.
Flower, please, sir.
3.
Did you catch her, Marlowe? Did you get her?
No, she got away. Which leaves you and me, Corky, to make cozy conversation about that mention of dough you slipped on when I let you out of the closet. Come on back in the room, honey.
What money?
Now, look, you worked for Eddie Shaft as a singer in his club, but what else was Eddie to you beside boss?
Just a minute. I don't see what business that is of yours.
It's easy. He was murdered.
The cops have already talked to me, soldier. I'm clean.
Those negotiations can be reopened at any time. But one thing, you forgot to tell them anything about dough, and yet they're very interested in 50,000 missing bucks. That 50 grand was right here in the apartment, wasn't it?
Well, you can't blame a girl for trying, Marlon.
No, not unless she tries too hard. Now, what does the name Francis Dragato mean to you?
Francis Dragato?
Okay, skip it. Where'd you get the dough?
Eddie gave it to me to keep for him.
Why you? I thought Norma Maeda had the inside track with Eddie.
Not after he fell in love with me.
Oh, no, that's not good enough, baby. There was a double cross. Where was it? Now, look, Corky, you might as well be smart about it, huh?
All right, I didn't kill him. But if you can get that dough back for me, I'll split it with you. Right down the middle.
I'm listening.
That club of his is dying on its feet. The blue chip's going broke. Eddie and Norma Maeda raised $50,000 to keep it going. But Eddie decided to get out from under. He got rid of Norma by sending her to Chicago in a trumped-up deal. And he put all that cash in one lump and gave it to me to hold. We're going to run out together.
Only somebody got to him, nailed him, and that left you holding the bag with 50 grand in it. That's nice. Except then a girl who belongs in this mess like a great-grandmother belongs in a high hurdle race stepped in and took it away from you. With the help of a southern accent and dark glasses.
Who are you calling?
A friend of mine at Homicide.
Why, you...
Sit down and shut up. So far you've been lucky, Corky. Don't push it.
Matthews, Homicide.
Marlowe Matthews, listen, on that Eddie Shaft case...
Yeah, what about it?
I got a couple of things you might be of help to you. Now, look, item one. That missing 50 grand is being sought after by a southern accent and dark glasses.
A woman?
Yeah, and she pulled a gun on me. Item two. The name Francis Dragato, it ties in. Dragotto. Ring any bells?
Dragato.
That's what I said.
Yeah, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, what? I remember, yeah. Yeah, but it's nothing, Marlowe. It's ancient history. Dragato, I knew, was a third-rate burglar shot and killed resisting arrest down the Sandbar District about 5 years ago, way back when I was a prowl car sergeant. Look, what about this
southern... Tell me, Dragato have a wife?
No, I think there was a daughter around.
Name Francis?
I don't remember that good, Marlowe. Look, what is this Dragato business anyway?
Well, so far it's a hunch.
That's what I thought. Climb off of it and get down to facts, will you? Who's the dame after that Eddie Shaft money? Where did you run into her?
I lost her on Ivar.
That's not what I asked you,
Marlowe. I know that's not what you asked, but anything else would be a breach of my client's confidence.
All right, look, Marlowe, I'm real serious. I'm going to give you just 1 hour to notify your client and get down here and spill. After that, I'm putting out a call to have you picked up for withholding evidence.
Yeah, Matthews ain't kidding this time.
You didn't say goodbye. That's quite a tightrope you walk, Marlowe.
Yeah, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. You're good. And I'm a girl of my word. You get that money back for me and it's 50-50. You're my only chance.
Don't kid an old kidder, baby. You're a girl of two words, double and cross. Good night, Corky. Well, I found my car all right, a half a block from Sunset Boulevard. It took 20 minutes to get from there to the Sandbar District. And it was downhill all the way. It was a neighborhood squeezed and cramped in by a solid wall of massive factories, and as fested as the bottom of a bent garbage can. At the corner of River Street and 3rd, I found the house. Three sagging, rotten stories of tenement that squatted in the eternal shadow of a huge gas tank like a sick, dirty old man. The proud, gleaming giant of City Hall was only 7 blocks away. Might just as well have been 70 miles. I went up to the door and knocked, and finally it inched open just far enough for a face the color of dishwater to peek out. She hissed at me for a minute through the gap where her front teeth should have been and then told me she was Ma Hargis, the manager, motioned me inside. The living room looked like something swept out the back door of a down-at-the-heel museum.
So, you want to know about the Dragotas, huh?
Yeah, they lived here, didn't they?
Maybe, maybe not.
Cops got the old man about 5 years ago?
It's possible.
Hmm. What became of his daughter? Where's Francis Dragotto?
Why?
What are you being so cagey about, Ma?
Because a bird that asks questions has got an angle, always.
And the one who knows the answer has got a price, huh?
Always.
Hmm. Okay, how far will a couple of bucks go?
From here to the door. $2 won't even buy a buzz on beer these days.
All right, we'll make it 5. Here.
Oh, that's better. Well, Dirk Dragotto and his kid Francis had the second floor here for 15 years. His wife died of TB first year they was here. Oh, she was a smart one, that Francis. Had a head on her.
Mm.
She always said she was going to get off the sandbar someday and be somebody. Oh, I told her she'd never make it. It's too far, mister. Kids down here get dirty. And it's the kind of dirt you can't wipe off. It gets inside of mine. No. Yeah.
Tell me, what happened to her?
I don't know. When her old man got it, she left, and I never seen her again. Not to this day. Probably left town and wound up working the gin mills in some other place.
Is that the $5 worth?
Huh? Well, you bought sight unseen, sonny.
Tell me, you got a picture of her?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have.
Good.
She was 17 at the time. It's kind of fuzzy, but you can see.
Hey,
she
wait
was
a minute, Ma. Huh? Are you sure this is Frances Dragotto?
Say, she lived in this dump for 15 years, out, I'm sure, I know.
She looks like somebody else. Girl who was supposed to get married tonight.
I got another picture of Frances here someplace. Wait a minute, a better one. Let me see now. Yeah, here it is. This was took down on Oliveira Street, one of them stands. Oh, that's her best friend there with her, Norma Maeta.
Norma Maeta?
Norma was a tough little egg. Folks drank all the time and let Norma run wild.
Oh, fine. Mm. Francis Dragotto and Norma Maeta are friends.
I'll say. Them two was quite a team.
You bet.
I always wanted to do something for them girls, but what can you ever do in a hole like this for anybody?
You've just done it, Ma. Here's 5 more. Buy yourself another light bulb. Throw a party with the change. So long. The eyes of one young woman and the chin and mouth of another, side by side, smiling into a camera, had cleared up a lot of questions. But there was one more that needed an answer fast. I called Matthews from the first phone booth I came to, brought him up to date in a hurry, and then asked him to check Norma Maeda's place. That was blank to meet me at the Moore Park Court Apartments, which was the only other likely place I could think of. I crowded traffic lights all the way out, but he and Sergeant Mooney got there almost as soon as I did. And I led them back to Frances Dragotto's well-lit cottage, the one she'd taken in her new name, Shirley Doyle. Mooney went to cover the back while Matthews and I moved in up front.
Your hunches are paying off tonight, Marlowe.
Oh, yeah, they're in here all right.
Yeah, come on over this way. The window's open. We could catch a little conversation first, you know. It might help.
Yeah, if you keep quiet, we can.
I'm due in Chicago. Thanks for your help, Francis, dear.
Yeah.
I had to get this money. Now more than ever.
You've got it, Norma, so goodbye.
Now that stuffed shirt you're going to marry, you'll never know where you really came from or who you really are.
Did you get that?
Oh, and one more thing, dear, before I go.
Yeah.
I killed Eddie Shaft this morning.
You what?
Heard nothing, Matthew?
No, hold on. When he put me on the plane for Chicago, I figured something was fishy, so I got off and I came back. And I found out he was selling me short for that little jerk, Corky Netherlands. We had an argument. I killed him.
Well, of all the...
Then I remembered seeing you leave the blue chip last night. I needed someone like you to get the money for me, Francis.
Yeah, there's your tie-in.
I couldn't afford to be seen here in L.A. when I was supposed to be in Chicago. Not with a murder on my neck.
But you were seen by that man who chased me at the hotel.
Who, Marlowe? He's still looking for a southern drawl and dark glasses. You're the only one who knows the truth, and you're in it with me now.
I'm not going to let you involve me in a murder, Norma. Getting that money was one thing, but I'm not going to be mixed up in a killing. I don't care what it costs me. I'm going to tell the whole thing.
You're a fool, Francis. I got a good alibi for one murder. It'll work for two.
Let's go, Matthews.
Yeah,
you're
fast.
Not gonna
come on.
Stop me now, Francis.
Oh, no.
Nobody is. And who's that?
All right, hold it, girls. We're police.
You're not taking me.
Come back, Matthews.
Yeah. Morning, stop her.
Hey, stop. Drop it, lady.
No.
Come on, Marlowe.
I think she's dead, Lieutenant. She wouldn't stop. She was shooting at me, but she's a woman.
All right, Mooney. That gun in her hand, she was a killer and nothing more.
Yeah, I suppose she was. If you asked that kid inside, she could tell you what made her that way. Oh, well, let's get out of here, Matthews.
I can't thank you enough, Mr. Marlowe, for bringing Shirley, that is, Francis, back to me safely.
Oh, believe me, Mr. Kettering, it was a real pleasure.
And you, Lieutenant Matthews, for your cooperation on withholding the publicity aspects of this horrible
thing. Oh, no, it's okay, Mr. Kettering. Glad to help out.
We're going to be married, you know, right away. Shirley told me the story and wanted to postpone the wedding, but I wouldn't hear of it.
Good.
After all, I'm not marrying her for the past. I'm marrying her for the future.
Yeah. Best wishes, Mr. Kettering.
Yeah. Maybe tomorrow when Shirley's calmed down. Give her my congratulations, will you? Well, after a long cup of coffee and a lot of conversation about people with Matthews, I finally got in my car and headed home to my apartment on Franklin Avenue. Which isn't the best street in town, but it is lined with palm trees instead of garbage cans. And the sun hits it all day long. Yeah, but that reminded me again of River Street, the deep perpetual shadow that hangs over it. A dirty shadow that Ma Hargis said could never be rubbed off. A shadow that spawns the Norma Maedas of the world. I was still thinking about it while I got ready for bed. I knew Ma wasn't 100% right. I'd seen the exception to the rule. But she was 99% right. Just enough to disturb my sleep. Oh, well. One guy can't change things. Can he?
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Gerald Moore may currently be seen starring in Republic's The Blonde Bandit. Featured in tonight's cast were Lillian Baeff, Joan Banks, Verna Felton, Yvonne Patey, Jeff Corey, Jack Crucian, and Tom Holland. Detective Lieutenant Matthews is played by Larry Dubkin. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Thank you. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That is The Adventures of Philip Marlowe with The Deep Shadow, March 21st, 1950, starring Gerald Moore. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. So, Lisa Wolf.
Yes,
happy St. Patrick's Day to
well,
you.
Well, it's almost over. About
woman
one more minute.
In teal.
Women in teal. You know, somebody made a really good point. Teal is a combination of green and blue. So if it's teal, it's still green.
It's definitely not green.
If it's teal, it's green. It's a portion
what
green.
What was the song? We should play it a little later in the show with the frog. I something love being green. I was like, remember Kermit?
Kermit.
What? Kermit the Frog?
It's something being green. It's,
yeah, what it's, is that song?
Is it, it's not easy being
it's
green?
It's not easy being green.
Dave has it. All right, Dave. It's not easy being green. Remember?
No.
Only it sounded a lot better. way to go, David. Hey, what's a leprechaun's favorite kind of music, Lisa? Do you know?
I would
Dave, do you know what a leprechaun's favorite kind of music is?
You just ask me and then you ask Dave.
So I'm going to leave that one alone and wait for the answer.
Do you know, Lisa?
I don't.
Do you know Shantae? No. Well, it's actually Shamrock and Roll.
Oh. Well, a little bit later, when we have a little bit of time, I have... Oh, he's laughing. So you
See?
Did well. I have a little St. Patrick's Day quiz that we're going to take
quiz.
When we have a little bit of time this
wow.
hour, later on. Yep.
You know, I graduated with the highest temperature in my class. So I should
never
be able
heard
to get
that one
that.
Before.
I should definitely be able to get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we can all play. You can play with us. We'll whoever's here, we'll play. We're going to do a little quiz.
Sounds good. In our next hour, we're going to tune into the Jack Benny program from 1954. Then after that, crime classics. So stay with us. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David Jennings. It is 8 minutes after midnight here on Sunday, the day after St. Patty's Day. So now it doesn't matter if you're wearing teal or green, although it is absolutely teal.
But teal is greenish.
Huh?
Teal is greenish.
It's a what? What?
I think it counts.
No, it doesn't.
Counts.
You know what, Lisa? I will give you the old college try, though. You tried.
This is the closest thing to green that I could find.
I don't have anything green.
This is my daughter's shirt.
I really don't have anything green. I wanted to wear green.
She said it's not green, but you can wear it. I said, it's green. She says it's not.
No. Nah.
I said, well, I'm wearing
but
it.
But you know what? You attempted to wear something that fit St. Patty's Day. So for that, I give you...
Give me what?
You know, like a
half a power
like
bar.
So what's this? That's like the thumbs
kind
not
thumbs
all the way
to
up,
the side.
Half side up.
Well, I think I get a thumbs up.
Yeah. All right,
okay.
Lisa.
I'm gonna take that.
In this hour, we're going to tune in to the Jack Benny program from 1954. They're returning to New York on a train. So it's going to be a very fun show. And we're going to talk a little bit about it because this is a very interesting program. In fact, Harry Shearer, you know who Harry Shearer is? From, you know, The Simpsons.
Yeah, of course.
So many different things. He's like a little kid.
Yeah.
He's on this show from 1954. You'll hear him. Also, Mary's Lines, Mary Livingston.
Yeah.
At this time, she wasn't really part of the Jack Benny whole cast anymore. She was kind of retired. And she didn't want to be on the radio shows anymore. She was on the TV shows for a while. So they dubbed her lines in. And I want...
Huh.
See if you can tell that her lines are sort of dubbed in.
I will listen.
Interesting program. But right now it's time to play Crack the Quote by Cat's Pride. Say that five times fast.
Yeah, I think this is an easy one.
All right.
I'm looking at it thinking everybody's going to know the answer,
okay.
Even you.
All right.
It's a Wonderful Life is the movie.
Yeah.
And I really feel like this is a dead giveaway.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Call us, 312-981-7200. We'll take the third caller.
And we're going to give away a Twilight Zone audio drama set.
All right.
It's audio drama. What is it?
Were you drinking before you got here? Were you drinking some libations before you got here, Lisa?
Six CD set.
All right.
Twilight
it's five
Zones.
CD set.
Six.
No, it's a five CD.
Is it?
Don't tell people six when it's
is
only
it five.
It's a five CD set.
Oh, that
set.
Was an honest
it's
error.
It's always been five.
A five CD set.
All right. Thanks, Lisa. Call us now. We'll be right back. And we were both wrong. It's not a five CD set.
Would you wait?
Wait, Roger's got to talk here. Wait. Okay, now we can talk.
Can you stop talking for like 30 seconds? It's a four CD set. I said six and you said five. It's four.
It's four CDs.
Either way, it's great. It's four. It's a lot of CDs and it's Twilight Zone. So to that end, you'll win.
Let's say hi to Al.
Hey, Al. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm great.
Good. We're glad you called in. I really think this is the easiest one so far. So I think.
Okay, that's the third time you said that.
No, I'm just setting the stage
Al,
here.
Isn't that the third time she's said that? She's setting us up. That's what she does.
She's setting me up.
Yeah, she's setting us up.
My favorite movies. Yeah. I cry every time that Clarence gets his wings.
That's right.
And I'm getting set up here.
You're going to know this one.
She's
I don't know about Carl.
Very
you are going to know this one.
Lisa Wolf.
All right, give it a go.
All right, here we go. Quote number one. And the moonbeams that shoot out of your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. Quote number two, the moon is a loyal companion. Quote number three, you are my sun, my moon, and all my stars.
See, she's setting us up. This is a tough one.
What?
You know what?
No, I'm going with number one.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Al.
I would stick with Al, too. All right, let's hear it, Shante.
And the moonbeams that shoot out of your fingers
I
and
told
your toes
you.
And the ends of your hair.
But you know what? There is nothing that I could write that would sound like that sentence. I mean, that just is its own moment.
All right. Al's
anyway,
a big winner.
You are a winner. You have won the four CD set. It's not five or six. It's the four CD set Twilight Zones.
We were drinking. Hey, Al, I got a question for you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, go for it.
How did the Irish jig get started? How did the Irish jig get started?
You're not telling me there's alcohol involved.
Well, maybe. Too much to drink and not enough restrooms. Huh?
All right, that's a good room.
That's
sound.
A good
who
one,
needs
right?
A restroom.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thanks
turn
a
around.
Lot, buddy. You're a big winner. Appreciate you calling.
Yeah, thanks. I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I try to listen as often as I can. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for doing that. We appreciate you and all of our listeners here.
Hi,
on
Al.
WGN. We've been on the air for 3 years now,
yep.
Right? This April will be 3 years.
April will be 3 years.
Wow.
We need a party.
Time. Big party.
A big party with at least four people.
Mm-hmm. I like it. All right. If you want to text us, our text in line is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We love getting your texts. All right. It's time for Jack Benny. As I said, this was at a time when Mary Livingston was really not that interested in being part of the radio show anymore. She was on the TV show, but her daughter, Joan Benny, used to stand in for her, and then they would dub in Mary's lines when she had the opportunity to record it. So that's what she did on this particular episode. And listen for a young Harry Shearer. He's on this show as well. Let's go back to March 14th, 1954, for the Jack Benny program.
The Jack Benny program. Starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack Benny and his cast are returning from their trip to New York. At the moment, they're in Mary's compartment aboard the Super Chief, playing 20 questions.
Now, let's see, Mary. We've used up 16 questions, and we found that you're thinking of something that's animal. He's very famous in show business and is over 6 feet tall.
That's right.
Oh, I know. Jimmy Stewart.
No.
Gary Cooper.
Yep.
Well, we guessed that one. Now, let's see. It's your turn, Dennis.
Okay, I got a good one.
Is it animal, mineral, or vegetable?
It's animal, I think.
You think?
Yeah, is a bird considered an animal?
Certainly. Hey, Mary, this silly kid just gave himself away. Watch this. Tell me, Dennis, is it a bird?
Uh-huh.
You see, Mary? You see?
Yeah. Dennis, is this bird extinct?
No.
Is Is this bird found in America?
Yes.
A sparrow?
No.
Robin?
No.
Wait a minute, Dennis. Is this a very large bird?
Uh-huh.
An eagle?
No.
A buzzard?
No.
Look, Dennis.
Wait a minute, Don. Wait a minute, Don. Hold it, hold it. I think I've got it. Dennis, does this bird go to Capistrano quite frequently?
Yes, yes.
It's a swallow?
No.
No?
No. Does everybody give up?
I do.
Oh, I give up.
Me too. What is it?
Walter Pigeon.
Walter Pigeon? Dennis, how can you say he's a bird?
I read in the paper where he just flew to New York.
Dennis, you thought he was a bird because his name is Pigeon and he just flew to New York. But how can you say that he frequently goes to Capistrano?
His mother lives there.
Dennis, that's the silliest thing I ever heard.
Jack, it's your turn now.
I know, and I've got a good one. You'll never guess this one. Go ahead, all you smart guys. Start guessing.
Okay, Jack. Is it animal, mineral, or vegetable?
Animal.
Is it alive?
Yeah.
A human being?
Yes.
Has it got a mustache?
Yeah.
Bald?
Bald, yeah.
I got it. No, it couldn't be.
Wait, who are you thinking of?
My girl, but you don't know her.
Come on, kids, put on your thinking cap.
Let's see. He's a man with a mustache. Is he in show business?
Yes.
Does he make pictures?
Yeah.
One of his pictures currently showing?
Uh-huh.
I know. He's Herman Quigley, the assistant cameraman on the Humphrey Bogart's new picture, Beat the Devil.
Gee, that's right. But how in the world did you ever guess Herman Quigley?
It was obvious.
What do you mean, obvious?
Yeah, just before you went to New York, you ran into him at the Brown Derby. He'd forgotten his wallet. You loaned him $1.50, and he's been on your mind ever since.
Yeah. Gee, I hope he pays me back the money. Look, his watch doesn't even keep good time. It's your turn, Don.
Oh, you better skip me for a few minutes. I want to go back to my compartment and see if the porter took all the dishes out.
Now, why is it whenever we're on a train, you never eat in the diner? You always have your meals served in your compartment.
My wife makes me do that.
Why?
She doesn't want people to see what a pig I am.
Well, hurry back, Don, so we can continue with the game.
Okay.
Hey, kids. Kids, I'm glad Don's gone. I've got a trick I want to play on him.
Yeah, yeah, what is it?
Well, you know Don. He's always thinking about lucky strikes. So when we play the game again and it's his turn, he's sure to pick luckies. And we'll make believe we can't guess it.
What makes you so sure he'll pick lucky strikes?
Because he never thinks of anything else. In fact, when he went on his honeymoon, he registered at the hotel as Don Wilson and Cigarette. So remember, when he comes back, we'll trick him.
Gee, Mr. Benny, do you think that's much fun?
You mean tricking Don?
No, going on a honeymoon with a cigarette.
Oh, keep quiet. Hey, that's him. Now, don't forget, kids. Come in. Oh, it's Bob Crosby.
Hiya, Jack. Hello, Denny. Hello, Mary.
Say, Bob, where have you been keeping yourself?
Oh, I've been in the lounge with Bagby, Fletcher, and some of the other boys in the band. We're playing a game called Two Questions.
No, Bob, you mean 20 questions.
No, two questions, ginger ale or straight.
Well, that I should have known. I haven't seen Bagby since he fell off at Kansas City.
Coming or going?
Oh, he fell off going, too?
Well, at least Bagby got back on. Remney missed the train entirely in Chicago.
Well, you can blame that on Jack's program.
Blame it on my program?
Yeah, they keep singing Be Happy-Go-Lucky, and Remley overdoes it.
Well, look, Bob, whether he overdoes it or not, as soon as we arrive in Los Angeles, we're going right to the studio for rehearsal. And if he isn't there, I'm going to dock him 2 weeks' salary.
Oh, you can't scare Rem with that kind of stuff. You know, he comes from a very wealthy family.
Remley? I didn't know that.
Why, certainly. His father made a fortune growing sweet potatoes.
Sweet potatoes?
He's got the biggest yam plantation in Texas.
Ooh, what he said.
He said yam.
Oh.
Say, Jack, I've been meaning to ask you, why have you got that black band on your arm?
Well, tomorrow is March 15th, you know.
Yes. Well, I better get back and check on the fellas. I'll see you all later.
All right, so long, Bob. Now, Dennis, while we're waiting for Don, how about letting us hear the song you're going to do on next Sunday's show?
All right, but I'd like to dedicate the song to my girl.
Your girl? Okay. What's the name of the song?
How You Fix for Blades.
Now, cut that out! And just do your song.
Okay.
An Irishman, will steal your heart away. He'll bedevil you and beguile you with his hullabaloo belay. When that rogue turns on the brogue, your heart will go astray. Oh, an Irishman, will steal your heart away. An Englishman has manners, an Englishman has charm. They say it's truly difficult to raffle his aplomb. He'll hold you and he'll kiss you, but wherever he may be. At 4 o'clock, he'll have to stop to sip a cup of tea. But an Irishman, will steal your heart away. He'll bedevil you and beguile you with his hullabaloo belay. When that rogue turns on the brogue, your heart will go astray. Oh, an Irishman, will steal your heart away. Italian men are fiery, Italian men are warm. And when they love, they love with all the fury of a storm. But you can turn the flame to ice and make them run for life. For all you gotta do is eat a spaghetti with a knife. But an Irishman, will steal your heart away. He'll bedevil you and beguile you with his hullabaloo belay. When that rogue turns on the brogue, your heart will go astray. Oh, an Irishman, will steal your heart away.
A Frenchman is romantic. The French have savoir-faire. When he makes love to you, it's always très, très débonnaire. He'll say to you, toujours l'amour, my life on you depends. But next day he'll be making love to two of your best friends.
An Irishman, will steal your heart away. He'll bedevil you and beguile you with his hullabaloo belay. When that rogue turns on the brogue, your heart will go astray. Oh, an Irishman, will steal your heart away.
The German man is steady, the German man is smart. For he'll come around and around again to win the Fräulein's heart. But you can lose him easily and make him hide his face. When he comes round to see you, tell him, this is not the place!
An Irishman, will steal your heart away. He'll bedevil you and beguile you with his hullabaloo belay. When that rogue turns on the brogue, your heart will go astray. Oh, an Irishman, will steal your heart away.
Now they fit right in for St. Patty's Day.
See, I did my job.
Always right after there. Me Lucky Charms. You remember those commercials, Roger?
They're magically delicious.
Do they even do those anymore?
Yeah,
always
they do,
after
sure.
Me Lucky Charms.
They're still on.
Yeah?
Want to do a little quiz for a couple
Oh, yeah, we've
questions?
Got a couple seconds here, sure.
Do you want to play, Roger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? This is our St. Patty's Day quiz.
Oh, all right.
Question number one. Okay. Which of the following statements about St. Patrick's is verifiably true? About St. Patrick.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is verifiably true.
Mm-hmm.
He drove the snakes out of Ireland. He suffered from curvature of the spine. He once threw a copper kettle over a pub, or he was never actually a saint.
Hmm.
Well, he was a saint.
Well, I know the answer.
I know you know the answer.
No, I mean, I just
say,
knew it.
I'd say...
he suffered curvature of the spine.
I'm going to say the first one you said where he drove the snakes out.
Why can't I find the answer? No, but I thought I knew the answer. I thought it was the snake one.
Ah.
That's... Okay, wait. I have to... Darn it. I'm going to have to get back to you
on
the
answer. All right. She'll get back to us on that. Let's take a break, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Back from the news, it's the conclusion to the Jack Benny program from 1954. Then after that, a really good mystery on crime classics called John Hayes, His Head, and How They Parted. I'm guessing his head got chopped off. Roger.
It's a very heady subject.
It is. I tell you what... Yeah.
Well, unfortunately,
she lost the information.
No, I didn't lose it. Unfortunately, I chose a really poor quiz online because
you have to
subscribe in order to get the answer. So I will work on it, and we will come up with another quiz when we have some time.
Just sell one of those Maybach or one of your Mercedes or one of the Lamborghinis.
I thought she owned the internet.
I honestly think the correct answer, though, is the one
I
said.
Her and Al Gore. Yeah, they started it together.
I think he drove the snakes out of Ireland. I was playing a...
what kind of car did he drive?
Well, you know, I was playing HQ, and that was one of the questions the other day. Do you play that, Raj?
HQ?
HQ online. I know you
do. I've heard
of
HiQ.
Okay, never mind.
But that was a long time.
I've heard of barbecue.
Hey.
Yeah. That's what I was talking about. Do you play barbecue online? That's exactly what I meant
like
to
barbecue.
Say.
I like barbecue.
Do you?
Yeah.
I barbecued with you once.
That's right.
For you
we
once.
We did.
For
it was a
him.
Hot date,
very
wasn't it?
We had a hot date with my husband and Carl. It was a lot of fun.
I'm like the third wheel over whenever I go over to Lisa's house. All right, let's take a break for news. And when we come back, it's more of Jack Benny.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Roger, I have some bad news for you.
Uh-oh.
You were wrong.
I was wrong. Oh, you found out the answer?
Yes.
The curvature of the spine?
No, it's,
it's the curvature
scoliosis.
Of the earth, maybe.
The curvature. It's a flat earth. You know that.
So it was the snakes, right?
It was the snakes. Yeah, I still want to know what car. Did he need a station wagon? A VW bus?
To get the snakes out?
Yeah. Well, he drove them out.
It was on a plane. It's snakes on a plane.
Oh, snakes.
That's right.
Crack that quote.
Right.
That's right.
Very good, Lisa.
Thanks, Kyle.
Oh, man. She is so smart.
She's quick,
isn't
she?
Witty?
Yeah, well,
she's very witty.
That's why I get the big bucks.
You know what kind of witty she is?
What kind
Dim
of witty?
Nitwitty.
Dimwitty. I said it for you.
All right, let's get back now to the Jack Benny program.
Hey, we'll be in Albuquerque soon. Gee, that'll be $126 worth of my ticket used up. Gee, I didn't think the club car was so... Whoops. Oh, pardon me, lady.
Why, certainly. Say, aren't you Jack Benny, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Mr. Benny, would you mind autographing this magazine for my granddaughter?
Your granddaughter? I'll be glad to. There you are. Are you going to Los Angeles?
Yes, I'm going to visit my son in Beverly Hills. Perhaps you know him. He's a competitor of yours.
Oh, is he a comedian?
No, he owns a laundry.
Oh.
He's an awfully good boy. He's having me come all the way out from Chicago just to celebrate my birthday. That's tomorrow.
Oh, how nice. Happy birthday. How old will you be?
39.
Oh, you're teasing me, huh?
Yes, I am. I'm really 72.
Well, then why do you tell people you're 39?
It gets laughs.
Oh, I see.
Well, goodbye, and thanks for the autograph.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
That's my fountain pen.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm terribly sorry. Here you are. Sorry. Gee, for an old lady, she's got eyes like a hawk.
Yeah, California's sure a nice place to live, Sam.
Oh, there's Rochester. He's in there talking to the porter. I'm going to stay here and listen to this.
How long have you been working for Mr. Benny Rochester?
12 years, 6 months, and 14 weeks.
Well, how come you know the time so exactly?
My friend, when you're in Mr. Benny's employ, you don't get money, you get service stripes.
Well, Rochester, if he ain't paying you much, why don't you leave him?
Oh, I'd never leave Mr. Benny. He may have his faults, but deep down inside, he's the kindest man I know.
Really?
Yeah, I'll never forget the time I had pneumonia. I was so sick. For a full week, I had 105 fever. And all that time, Mr. Benny stayed right with me, fed me, and nursed me.
No kidding.
And then at 2 o'clock one morning, I passed the crisis. My fever broke and my temperature went down to normal. Mr. Benny looked at me, smiled, and said, "Rochester, you're going to be all right." Then he yanked me out of bed and shoved a broom in my hand.
You know, Rochester, this isn't the first time Mr. Benny's been on one of my cars. I've made the trip with him cross-country several times. Man, it's murder. Oh, I don't mind the fact that he don't tip much, but whenever he's aboard, the train's always 15 or 20 minutes late. Now, a couple of years ago, he insisted that the train make an unscheduled stop at Newton, Kansas. Then once he made a stop for half an hour at Gallup, New Mexico. Once he set the super chief back a whole hour when he got off at Trinidad, Colorado. And this trip, I heard him tell the conductor to make another unscheduled stop.
At Flagstaff, Arizona.
Yeah. Has he got relatives in all those places?
No, bank accounts.
I wish he wouldn't discuss my private affairs.
Rochester, I can't understand why Mr. Benny keeps saving his money like that. He's not married. He's got no family, no children. Who's he going to leave it to?
What makes you think he's going to leave it?
Rochester!
Huh? Oh, hello, boy!
Oh, yes. Rochester, I heard what you were saying. And if you don't behave yourself, you're not going to get that new gold stripe this year. I'll be up in the club car in case you want to see me.
Yes, sir.
Gee, I had a good time in New York. Looked up all my old friends. Ate in those wonderful restaurants. My sponsor was so nice to me. I spent over 20 minutes in his office. He let me sit down this time. He's a nice guy. Oh, look at that cute little boy. Hello, little boy.
Hello, mister.
What's your name?
My name is... Say, aren't you Jack Benny?
Why, yes, I am.
I recognized you from your television show.
Really?
Uh-huh. I saw that one with Liberace, and it was great when you played your violin. Thanks very much.
Thanks? I mean, you're thanking me for playing the violin?
Yeah, the next day my mother let me stop taking lessons.
Well... Goodbye, little boy.
Goodbye, Mr. Benny, and thanks again.
You're welcome. Gee, the club car's crowded. Oh, there's a vacant seat next to that man over there. Excuse me, mister, do you mind if I sit here?
No, not at all. Glad to have company.
Well, thank you. Well, here's a late newspaper. I think...
Sure is exciting out on the road. I'm traveling for Watson's Woolen Underwear.
Watson's Woolen Underwear?
Oh, sure. You must have heard of us. We advertise on the radio.
Really?
Watson's Woolens fit you snug, keep you warm as a bug in a rug. One flat button instead of two. Watson's Woolens are the buy for you.
Yes, I know that program. It features Spade Cooley and his Itchy Seven.
How's business?
Not so good. Was even bad in Chicago last week. Chicago's always been a great underwear town. Windy City, you know.
I know what you mean. Oh, are you in underwear, too?
Not today. It's a little warm.
Have you been in the underwear business very long, Mr.
March.
Mr. March, have you been in the underwear business very long?
No, just a few months. I used to travel for the firm of Leibowitz, Sanders, McIntyre, Findlay, and Teitelbaum.
Oh, yes, the chalk manufacturer.
Hey, you've been around.
Oh, I've traveled quite a bit. Well, so long, Mr. March.
So long. Enjoy talking to you, and don't forget... Watson's woolens fit you snug, keep you warm as a bug in a rug.
I won't forget.
One flap button instead of two. Watson's woolens are the buy for you. Tickle, 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 tickle.
Gee, what an eager beaver. Well, I think I'll go to bed. We arrived in Los Angeles so early.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You sure have an interesting job, Sam.
Rochester's still talking to that porter.
Yeah, you're right, Rochester. I've been across the continent over 100 times.
Gosh, you must know every inch of it.
Yeah, and America's an amazing country. It has Harlem on the East Coast, Central Avenue on the West Coast, and all that waste in between.
Dave, the first Saturday night you're in Los Angeles, we'll go out with those two girlfriends of yours.
Okay.
First we'll have dinner, and then we'll take them to the Hollywood Bowl.
But Rochester, this time of the year, there's nothing going on at the Hollywood Bowl.
We'll change that.
Oh, Rochester.
Yes, boss.
I'm going to bed. Make sure that my luggage is all ready when I get off tomorrow.
I will. Good night, boss.
Good night.
Mr. Benny.
Yeah?
Are you going to get off at Los Angeles or Pasadena?
Pasadena. I always get a bigger reception there. Good night.
Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's a reminder from the National Highway Safety Council. When driving, remember that courtesy is contagious. The careful driver always considers the careless driver. The golden rule applies to driving, too. Drive as you would have the other fellow drive. And please remember, when you're in your car, be a wise driver, not a wise guy. Thank you.
Well, Rochester, here we are home again.
Yeah, 4 weeks is a long time.
Believe me, I got sick and tired eating at those restaurants. It's good being home. I'm a little hungry. How about a nice home-cooked meal?
Okay, boss, I'll do it right now.
Good. What are you going to fix me?
Well, I'll fix you some veal cutlets with sour cream. Mm-hmm. A side dish of asparagus with sour cream. Mm-hmm. A nice baked potato with chives and sour cream. And for dessert, strawberries and sour cream.
But, Roxanne, why does everything have to have sour cream?
When we left, I forgot to stop the milk.
Well, go ahead and fix it. Good night, folks.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
That's a Jack Benny program from March 14th, 1954. Jack and all the gang. And it was heard on CBS. Hope you enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Do you have more of a quiz for us, Lisa?
Yes.
Is Roger up there, too, or no?
Yeah, he's there. Come on,
Roger. Is he
there?
I don't think so.
No, not right there, but
maybe
he's
taking a jig break. You know, we talked about the jig.
Yeah.
Why you have a jig, because you drink and there's no...
He's just stumbling
restrooms.
Over to his chair.
He's stumbling. All right, Roger, are you ready for...
Shoot,
you're 0 for 1.
Okay.
I just sat down. My goodness.
Okay, right. The first question is, who was St. Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
Was he a resident of Britain who was captured and enslaved in Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
An Irish monk who banished snakes from Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
A British sailor who was captured by Irish pirates? Or an Irish monk who saved his countrymen?
Well, Raj.
What was number two again?
An Irish monk who banished snakes.
And number one?
A resident of Britain who was captured and enslaved in Ireland.
I'm going to go with number one.
I will go with number two.
All right. The answer is number one.
Roger.
Roger.
Damn.
A resident of Britain who was captured and enslaved in Ireland and then went on to convert thousands of Irish people Christianity.
I remembered that he was not from Ireland. I remember that.
Yeah, he was from Italy.
That's why pizza is so popular in Ireland.
That's right. What?
All right, I'll give you one more question.
All right, okay. So this is a tiebreaker here,
I'm not sure I will be able to pronounce these names. What do historians believe was St. Patrick's name at birth?
Huh.
Uh-oh. Geez. I'm not going to be able to pronounce these correctly, so don't laugh at me. Okay, there's four. Trevitt, Matilde, Alden, Beckett, Maywin, Sukkot, or Merwin McGeat?
Who? What was the last one?
It has to be Merwin McGeat.
Merwin McGeat.
It has to be Merwin McGeat.
I'll say it one more time, okay? Trevitt Batilde, Alden Beckett, Maywin Sukkot, and Merwin McGeat.
Spelling Maywin?
Maewyn. Seems like Maywin,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay. What is it? One, two, or three?
Is it Trevitt, Alden, Maywin, or Merwin? How's that?
It's easy for you to say.
That's right.
I'll go with number two.
Okay, I'm going with Alden.
With number three.
And you're going with Maywin. Mm. The answer is.
Pay $50 for the answer.
I'm so sorry.
Not again.
It says.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Your credit card did not clear.
It did not load.
I'll
have to let you know. It says check
this
answer.
Is the best planned contest I've ever been involved in.
Roger, you know what this reminds me of? This is like if we were to get on Lisa's plane and she's flying it and she's like, give me the book, How to Land.
It's like being on the MTA.
Oh, I've got it.
Return.
The answer is Maywin.
Number three, right?
Number three.
He wins.
You got it, Maywin.
Yeah.
Maywin. Seriously, he took the name Patrick when he became a priest.
There you go, Roger.
So I will save some more questions. We have time for one more? It's really short.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you land the plane? That's what I need to know.
Right. Are you done?
Can you land this plane?
I can land this plane.
Okay.
Where and when was the first St. Paddy's Day parade in the United States? Was it Boston in 1809, Boston in 1911, New York in 1762, or Providence, Rhode Island in 1898?
I mean, it seems obvious that it's New York, so it probably isn't.
What were the two Boston dates again?
1809 or 1911. Usually if there's two Bostons, it's one of those. I'm just saying that would be
Wait a minute. How do you know?
Because that's just test-taking skills.
Yeah,
did you ever take the ACT?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. So I'm going to guess it's one of those two. And
she
I'm going to guess
scored 36
I'm gonna guess
on the ACT.
Probably. I'm going to guess it's... I'm going to guess it's...
All right, so wait.
So you don't even have the answers in
I have the answer now. I just checked it.
Roger, what do you think?
Providence, Rhode Island, New York, or two Bostons?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'll go with Boston, 1911.
Okay.
Even though it's wrong.
Providence.
You're both wrong. It's New York. Yeah. Just like you thought. And I was wrong, too.
You're supposed to stay with your first. That was
New
my
York
gut.
That was your gut,
that
New
was
York?
My gut.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have more questions for the next break.
That was my gut.
Yeah, right.
Left my gut in New York.
I don't want to hear about
really quickly. Roger, you haven't. Have you taken advantage of the surprise boxes yet?
I have not.
Oh.
I apologize.
Roger,
I'm sorry.
You know what I'm going to do? Really, really
things
upset with
busy.
You,
Roger.
Things
here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring you.
I got taxes to pay.
You're going
to
bring you.
I am going to bring you a
surprise.
Oh, don't! Surprise
you already
box.
Brought me a
no,
surprise.
You're getting a surprise box.
Oh boy!
We can't argue with him.
Roger, do you want a classic radio one? Do you want a classic movies and TV one? Or do you want a Twilight Zone box? Which one of those three boxes? I'm bringing you a box.
All right, now this is a contest. You gave me three possible answers. Which one do you think I would choose.
I would say you're going to take the classic radio on
you
CD.
You got that right.
All right, so that's what I'm going to prepare you.
Oh, you are
so
too
you're
going
to. I mean,
oh,
here,
stop.
So you know the deal, right?
Yeah.
You go to our website,
yep.
WGNRadioTheater.com.
Yep.
There's a pop-up. And there are three different surprises that you can choose, folks. You mm-hmm. can get the classic radio on CD. It's $150 worth of brand
wow.
new CDs for only $39.99. Then you can get the classic television and movies on DVD. Same thing, mm-hmm. $150 worth for only $39.99. Or you can get the Twilight Zone radio dramas. $150 worth on CD for only $39.99. So check them out. I got to tell you, Roger, I just did this kind of on a lark. Just thought, hey, let's just try it. Let's
Is
just
a lark
see.
Your favorite bird,
yeah.
Carl?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. And you know what's the one that puts its head into the sand?
That's an ostrich.
Yeah, I like that one too because there's no microphones down there.
Yeah, right.
But seriously, though, Rog,
yeah, it is a. It
I
is
did
a,
this as kind of a.
And I
got
to tell you, and you and I have talked before.
Yeah.
And I know we
got
to go to news, and I apologize, mm-hmm. but back in the day, before there was digital internet stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I was teaching in the
right.
early days of my teaching career,
right.
over 20 years ago,
right.
I would teach old-time radio, and in order to play examples of mm-hmm. the shows to students, I went and bought your CDs and cassettes.
Mm-hmm. I was selling them when I was still in diapers.
I know you were.
In my crib.
And
but
now
I used
look
to buy them
today.
at the bookstores.
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble
sure.
and Borders.
Yeah.
And they had this whole section of, you know, books on tape, books on CD,
yeah.
and yours were up there. And I used to buy them all the time.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I don't have them because I used to leave them at the schools whenever
yeah.
I would move on to another school. I would leave them because I didn't think I would need them again. But then I would have to go buy them again. And so I kept you in business for a while.
Right. But now it's like, you know, the Kevin Bacon thing.
Yeah. Full circle here.
Right. Yeah. We're, full circle.
It's just one degree of separation.
I know.
We're just a... just.
You guys
six
are like brothers.
Floors. We're really only six floors of separation here.
It's like we're sitting right next to each other.
So I'm going to bring you.
It's actually seven floors.
Yeah, I'm going to bring
yeah.
you a classic radio CD. I don't think it matters.
It does.
I'm going to bring you the classic
you're
radio
very kind.
CD.
Thank you.
All right?
Thank you so much.
But
you're welcome.
People, I think, well, you know, what's happening now is people have bought them, and now they're reordering.
Oh, that's
reordering.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, because you never know which ones you're going to get.
Yeah, you get all kinds
yeah.
of great stuff.
Yeah.
So just go to our website, WGNRadioTheater.com. Check out the pop-up and order some of your surprise boxes before they're gone. Once they're gone, they're gone.
They're gone.
They're gone.
Gone
forever.
Is gone.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Raj.
Yo.
Did a little drinking on St. Patrick's Day.
You did.
Yeah, went out.
Can't you tell?
Did a little drinking. And
yeah, he's kind of loose
he's
tonight.
Loose.
But you
yeah.
know what? I'm very responsible. I did a little drinking, but I decided to take a bus home. Wasn't that smart of me?
That was very smart of you.
Might not seem like a big deal to you, but I've never driven a bus.
About a split second short, too long on that. It could have been a little. Try it again. Give me the.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Give me the last one.
It may not be a big deal to you, but I've never driven a bus before.
Yeah, that's it.
Better
Man.
Timing. Thank you. Better
yes.
timing.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Do I
You're
get the
very
gig?
Welcome.
I'm trying to get a gig over at Zany's. So far,
yeah.
No calls.
No calls. I'm going to have to talk to
you. You know, I think there's something wrong with my phone, though.
Yeah.
What do you think, Lisa?
The messages are just not coming through.
The bill yeah. collectors keep coming through, though.
You're just not getting the messages.
I'm getting all the bill collectors.
You know what interview I'm working
you're
on,
late
Roger?
On your car payment.
Message?
I get that one a lot.
Do you want to know my next interview, Roger?
Ooh. Mr. Amaro, you're late on your car payment.
Yeah, there you go. Again. What? What?
Look,
what
you
I'm
have
sorry.
A car. You don't have to take the bus.
What? What in...
Wow. What, Lisa?
What?
What, Lisa?
I didn't say anything.
Okay. What interview are you working on there, Lisa?
Jay Leno is my next.
Yeah. She
yeah?
goes for the
He's,
big.
Well,
yeah,
if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's coming to the Genesee Theater in Waukegan next month.
Yeah, that's okay. where Jack Benny grew up.
Yep,
Waukegan Illinois. Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on setting something up with him. So I'm
you know, and this is a true
that.
This is a true story, Roger. Mm-hmm. I swear to you, this is a true story about Jay Leno. It's my Jay Leno story.
Jay Leno story. Okay.
This was years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm walking. I'm in L.A. and I'm walking across the street. I don't remember what street it was. And Jay Leno nearly, I swear to you, nearly ran me over in a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car. And this is a true story. He was literally driving a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car. And
maybe it was the
and
only
he was
one?
Like, oh, gee, I mean.
He has a lot of cars.
I mean, I was like, he.
Didn't
I saw it was Jay Leno.
Or Auga
no,
or something?
I have a feeling. I have a feeling that Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car didn't have very good brakes.
Well, maybe he didn't even try to brake.
And he almost ran me over.
Did he stop afterwards?
No, he just kind of gave me like, I'm really sorry.
And he just
I'm
kept,
Jay Leno,
maybe
don't
that's
get mad
he couldn't
at me.
Stop because he had no brakes.
So when you see him, Lisa, tell him that your co-host is the guy he almost ran over with his Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car.
I'm going to be sure to mention that.
How long ago was this now?
Maybe 10, 15 years ago.
I'm sure he'll remember.
Probably almost ran over a lot of people in that car because I don't think those brakes were very
good. That was a good story.
Well, it's a true story. All right?
It's a good one.
I've never tried driving a bus before.
That's right. Hang on. Say it again, Roch. What?
I've never tried driving a bus before. Thank you very much.
He's getting good, isn't he?
He is getting good.
All right. Yeah. Do you like crime classics?
You know, I do.
It's a very good series. That's coming up in this hour. Crime classics. What's our movie, Lisa?
Interstellar.
Interstellar. All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Win a 4-CD set of The Twilight Zone. Call right now. Be the second caller. Second caller, 312-981-7200. We'll play the game. Then we'll listen to crime classics after these words. I think I have something to read.
You too.
I don't have anything to read, no. But you know what? I want to make sure our listeners are texting and saying, was Carl serious? Was he really drinking? No, folks, I do not drink. I do not touch alcohol, and that's true.
No comment.
I do not touch alcohol.
I've seen you drink.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about, you mean, have a glass of wine if I'm having a steak? That's different.
That's not different. It's alcohol.
Yes, well, okay.
You're talking about going out and tying
one on at a
party.
You said I don't drink alcohol. Let's be clear.
Okay, I don't drink to the point of like getting inebriated.
All right. There you go.
I don't do that.
That's different.
Yeah, I'll maybe have one.
Where is that line, Carl?
This is true, Roger. I can't even finish a glass of wine.
I can understand that.
I can't.
Why?
If I get a glass of wine let's say I'm out to dinner and I'm having a steak and I get a glass of wine, I can't drink the whole glass of wine.
What's the problem?
I rarely touch alcohol.
I rarely drink. I mean, I know you like Roma wine. She can polish off a Roma wine bottle, boy.
Boy, I tell you, Lisa Wolf. A whole cask.
All right, so we have a caller.
We have Claudia.
Hi, Claudia.
Hey.
Oh, wait. We didn't play the theme. Hang on 1 second, Claudia. We've got to play our theme. One sec. Because Roger gets a royalty for this.
Crack the quote.
He'll get mad if we don't. He gets a royalty for this.
He gets a dollar every time we play that. So let's just keep it going.
What?
You get a dollar.
Hi, Claudia.
Hi, Claudia. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
Good to hear from you. Did you see Interstellar?
I did not see that movie.
You know what? I didn't see it either, but I think
you're
going to be good
anyway.
With this. I think you're
no
going to be great.
No matter what.
You'll win either 4, 5, or 6 CDs. Okay. Here we go. Quote number one. Murphy's Law says that nature always sides with a hidden flaw. Number two. Murphy's Law means if anything can go wrong, it will. Murphy's Law doesn't mean something bad will happen. It means whatever can happen will happen.
Oh, boy.
That's a tough one.
You're in it, too, Roger, so keep thinking.
One, two, or three?
I say number two.
What'd you say, two?
Roger?
Two.
I like three. I saw the movie, but it's so long ago.
All right, I'm going to go with one, then.
All right, we have a one, a two, and a three. Okay, help us out, Shante.
Murphy's Law doesn't mean that something bad will happen. What it means is that whatever can happen
What?
That was three, right?
You did it, Roger.
Roger.
That was
Roger,
three?
That was three.
Really?
You didn't even recognize your own quote.
I'm up here with green beer, you know?
But you know what? Claudia's a winner no matter what. Thank you for playing the game. You have won the Twilight Zone audio CD set. It is four CDs.
Yes.
And the Twilight Zones are fantastic, and they're hosted by Stacey Keach, and you will have hours and hours of enjoyment.
Enjoy that, Claudia. Thanks for calling in, staying up late with us. Thank you. All right, it's time now for Crime Classics. This was a really cool series. It was a docudrama, came to CBS Radio in 1953, lasted one season. It was created, produced, and directed by Elliot Lewis, and these were true crime stories. They examined crimes and murders throughout history, and Lou Merrill portrayed our host, Thomas Hyland. Very cool series. You're going to like this. Let's tune this in now, going back to October 28th, 1953. This is called John Hayes, His Head, and How They Parted. Lou Merrill, Part 1, Crime Classics.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Hyland with another true story of crime. Listen. The glass you just heard broken was not ordinary glass. It was a closed vessel of exact contour of the man's head which it held. It was raised exactly 1 millimeter above the skin all around and above the hair. No small feat since the hair on the head was lush and curly. Another masterpiece by Dom Llewellyn, whose secret of blowing glass to enclose human heads died when he died. Dom Llewellyn had been called in to do a job of work on what was left of Mr. John Hayes, which was all above the neck. So tonight, my report to you on John Hayes, his head, and how they were parted. Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Hyland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now once again, Mr. Thomas Hyland. The 18th century was only a few years old, and the town was Warwick, and the season was spring. Things were budding all around, trees, flowers, and there happened to be a 16-year-old girl named Catherine Hall. She appears suddenly in history, this girl, walking down the road. Suddenly, because nobody knows what parentage put her there. Isn't that nice? A young girl swinging down a road in May. Tra-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la- And alongside her, three soldiers, officers of His Majesty's Dragoons, and gentlemen. Gentlemen three, and guardians of Catherine, and Lieutenant Ombersley has the papers in his bandolier to prove it. Guardians and their ward at a crossroad.
Catherine?
Yes, Uncle?
Uncle Fred and Uncle Ned and I think the time has come...
For what, Uncle?
The time has come...
Do not be shy. How is it that always you are shy when the sun shines?
We have a wedding gift for you.
Uncle?
From all of us to you.
Uncles?
The gift, here. A scarf.
Uncles?
We'll miss you.
And I you.
And the time now to tell you of him, of the man you will marry. Of the man who comes down this road anon to take you from us, from Uncle Fred and Uncle Ned and myself.
Is he as tall as you?
He is very rich.
Is he as handsome as Uncle Ned?
He is very rich.
And has he the strength of Uncle Fred?
He is very rich.
Then I know I shall love him well.
Catherine?
Yes, Uncle.
Your duties as wife?
Yes, Uncle.
Always water in the pail, and loving nuptials cannot fail.
And?
Happy marriage in a springtime day. Child in the cradle on New Year's Day.
Oh, yes, Uncle. Oh, yes, Uncle.
He is prompt.
I die with impatience.
He has a fine span of horses, see?
I'm trembling.
Oh, John Hayes! Oh!
You, girl. If your name be Catherine, get in.
Uncle?
Get in, girl. Get in.
A kiss, Uncle, for farewell to you and Uncle Ned.
Which we did in tears and kisses the whole night past. Get in, girl. Get in.
Here's your money, Lieutenant. Small sackful, as was contracted for. Giddy up.
married that night, these impetuous 18th century lovers, these young people, Catherine Hall and John Hayes. History records that it was a rather hectic marriage. The groom's father went temporarily blind from drink before the ceremony. There was unruliness among the servants, and some sources state that the bride herself tried to sneak off and had to be restrained. But married they were just as evening sun went down. And that evening, after the house of John Hayes had quieted down, after the pig had been eaten and the toast drunk, after the celebrants had gone home and the windows bolted and the doors barred, after all these things...
There you are. Come on out now. There you are. Liberty Bird.
You know what you ought to do.
What?
Join the army.
Join the army?
Join the army.
Why should I do that?
I'd be so proud of you.
Aren't you proud of me now?
Think of you in a uniform.
I never did.
Well, then let's do it.
All right.
The scarlet trousers and the scarlet coat.
Oh, my.
And the golden sash and the gleaming scabbard.
And I'd stand up straight like this.
On your curly hair, a three-cornered hat and a cockade.
And I'd march. And I'd march.
And perhaps...
What?
They'd send you to America.
Yes. No.
You could volunteer for it.
No. You'd miss me too much. You'd suffer.
Oh, I'd write to you every day.
The boats to America do not sail very often.
I'd knit things for you and bake things for you. But mostly...
What?
I'd be proud. Oh, so proud. Dear John.
Well, I don't know.
Join the army.
Proud?
Oh, yes.
What would you do?
Well, tell people. John.
Yes.
Golden sash and gleaming scabbard... And on your head a three-cornered hat with a cockade, John. And you'd march so straight and tall, you'd march.
Like this?
Yes.
Like this?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Dear Father, I am writing this letter to tell you that I have just come back from a 20-mile march under full pack, and I do not like it. In the 6 months I have been in the army, I have not found a thing that I like about it. It is march, 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 march. In spite of my education, I am still but a grenadier. Two of the lads who joined the army with me are lieutenants and wear cockades, so please... Dear Father, present the government with £20 and secure my release from this life. I would do it with my own funds, but I had wisdom enough to assign my wealth to my wife's name before joining the army. I do not wish to bother Catherine in this matter, as I am going to surprise her by my appearance in civilian garb and put an end to her loneliness. Please, Father, do me this favor, your loving son, John. Oh, P.S. Please, Father... Just consider it alone.
The curious tailor from Tottenham.
Mr. Wood, you're the one.
And how about me?
Oh, you're a one too, Mr. Billings. You're... If it's the butcher boy, Mr. Wood.
Yeah, I'll send him on his way. Hi.
Who are you?
Who are you?
I am John Hayes.
Who?
John Hayes.
Oh, he be in the army. Oh,
not now. I am John Hayes, and I've come home to my wife. Where is she? Catherine!
Who is it?
Catherine! Catherine, I'm home!
Dirty deserter.
No.
Oh, shame.
Well, listen, I'm out of the army.
But you cannot be. I just sent you a sweater.
I'm out. My father paid a bounty for me and I'm home again. Who are these men, Catherine?
I'm Billings, the cooper.
I be Wood, the alehouseman.
Tradesman?
Aye.
What do we need a cooper and an alehouseman here?
Are you
questioning me, husband?
Well, I'd like to know why a Cooper and an ale
husband... Welcome out!
Aye, welcome out!
Ready here!
Come to home!
Drink a cheer, boys!
Ready here, oh, come to home!
Ready here, oh, come to home!
Come to home! Come to home! Come to home!
Oh, husband. Oh,
dear wife.
I was so proud of you when you were gone.
And you told people.
Oh, yes.
Drink a cheer.
Here.
Drink a cheer.
And now, wife.
We will celebrate you and me and Mr. Billings and Mr. Wood.
Well, I
Happy
thought...
Good. We'll have a celebrate.
John, you're dusty from the road. Go wash. There's a full pail, always a full pail, always waiting for your return. Go wash.
Yes.
Mr. Wood.
Aye, Katie.
Mr. Billings.
How did you come to marry such a one, Kate?
He's very rich.
And he's come home.
His wealth is assigned in my name. I receive it but in driblets.
Poor lady, shame.
If I were a widow...
The money...
All at once. All mine.
Billings?
Aye.
Let's make a widow.
And how to do that?
You kill an husband, you make a widow. Ain't that an axe above the fireplace?
Oh, dear friends.
I washed Catherine.
I was proud.
Ruddy hero.
A soldier had come home, to his wife, to his neighbors. There was wine in the room and a good fire. But it was one of the shortest celebrations on record. You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. This Saturday night, learn the true details of the Wheel of Misfortune case on Gangbusters. When a wheel, gangland terminology for a driver in a crime, runs afoul of the law, he cuts himself out of the crime in question. After the robbery comes off, the wheel declares himself in for a cut of the spoils, and murder results before police clamp the lid on the crooks. Gangbusters, this Saturday night on most of these same stations. The same evening to listen for CBS Radio's thrilling Gunsmoke series.
You know what they said the name of that? Hey, Roger, did you hear what they said the name of that Gangbusters episode was called? The Wheel of Misfortune. You know who the star of that program was?
You.
Vanna White.
Pat Sajak. Lisa got where I was going with that. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
And if people want to hear our podcast of the show, because, I don't know, a lot of people can't stay up for the full 3 hours. I mean, I know you can't.
I was saying, you're one of them.
She's in the corner sleeping away over there, Roger.
Really?
Carl's drooling. So.
we have a podcast for this show. Don't tell people about that.
I can't help it.
About my drooling problem.
He's got his little drool cup.
I upgraded it to a silver cup.
Silver now.
Year.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
You should bring your pajamas.
Before.
That way you'll, you know,
yeah,
maybe a little
my
blinky.
My footy pajamas. So we do have a podcast, and it's amazing. Shantae is just incredible. She has it up pretty close
I think it's
to,
already up.
We're like in the elevator and it's
not over yet.
She has a way of time traveling. She has it done before we're done.
I'm not kidding, Roger. When we get to the elevator, it's already up.
Yeah.
And
she's
that's because
the best.
No, it's because Carlo has stopped us in the bathroom for a while on his way out. It takes a while.
You didn't say
drive.
When you got to the elevator.
It's a long drive.
An hour later.
I have a long drive.
Seriously, 2:01 and it's already up. It's seriously
and
magical.
And unlike Lisa, who has like one of these huge Mercedes buses with a with a restroom inside of it,
restroom
I have
in
to
my
drive
bus.
My Yugo.
Yugo.
You go.
Can
all
you
right.
afford the gas for it?
No, but I keep getting calls. Your Yugo's payment is due.
Your Yugo went and got went.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, time now for the conclusion to Crime Classics.
And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics.
and his report to you on John Hayes, his head, and how they were parted. Historical background. We are concerned here with England in the early 1700s. George I sat upon the throne, and the terms Whig and Tory were being muttered and bandied about and chalked on walls. During one February, the great Sir Hugh Verdeny took time away from the Navy, went ashore long enough to invent the side pocket, only to die a year later in the Fijis. And in April, a month which concerns us most, King George put his queen in prison because of her part in the von Königsmark affair. But we are concerned most with a citizen of the time, Mr. John Hayes. We hear of him next on the evening of April 22nd. Two lovers who had never heard of him strolled along the Thames.
Let's sit here, Duck.
No, Thomas.
So they strolled on.
Mary, Duck, let's sit here.
Oh, no.
And on.
I like it here beneath the bridge, don't you?
Well?
See how the shadows lie like lacy web?
Where?
Yon.
Oh.
Let us sit and watch and see how they quiver, as riding moon, a trail in the sky.
Here?
Just so. Mary? Duck? You are dear to me.
Hush.
And how to wash this torrent inside me. Fair Mary. Fairest and most lovely. And now the blushes to your cheek beneath the moon.
Thomas.
Yes, Mary. I too.
Thomas.
This is an unreality which we see, Mary. A conjugation of shadow and moonlight and...
But it has such curly hair.
Lacy shadows.
And eyes and lips that grin. A head with no body. There in the mud.
It'll go away.
How can it? It's an abomination. Come.
It's not real.
It is real.
It is not.
Go see.
Duck.
Go see.
All right.
Well?
Go.
A head?
Of a man.
Of a curly-headed man. I knew it. Thomas Ascot, I did not want to come down here in the first place. You made me. You made me.
A head. Go.
So they discovered the head in the mud of the Thames, and after they married, they had a lot to talk about. It was the head of John Hayes, all right, but nobody knew it then. Thomas Ascot reported his unusual find to the constabulary, who went to the spot, saw that the lad was indeed a truthful lad, poked about searching for a body to go with the head, failed, and then brought back what had been found to the sheriff's offices. They cleaned and combed the find, known as dressing the head in the trade. Then they mounted it neatly on a 10-foot pole. This was the custom of the day. Whenever an extra head was found, mount it on a pole, exhibit it in the town square so it could be identified. Nobody, however, came forward in the prescribed 3 days, so Dom Llewellyn was called in. Do that thing you do with glass, Dom, he was told, with heads. Enclose this one for preservation purposes. And Dom did, with caliper and a secretly fashioned glass and blowpipe. And Tom did. In the meanwhile, back at the home of Catherine Hayes, she's just stepped out of her door on her way to the cheese stall.
Mrs. Hayes! Mrs. Hayes!
Good morning to you, Mrs. Martin.
Good morning to you. A marketing?
A marketing.
Mind you if I go along, if I walk with you?
Neighbor who walks alone, neighbor's alone.
Aye. Wise was the poet who first said that. Mrs. Hayes.
Yes?
A question.
Ninny do.
How go your two boarders?
Apace.
So?
Yes.
Mr. Wood is an attractive one. Wouldn't you say?
truth, I had not noticed.
Nonny, nonny, nonny. In truth, I suppose you'll say you have not noticed the prettiness of Mr. Billings.
Not at all. Through the goodness of my heart for poor tradesmen, they live in my cellar. Truth, I never see them.
And Mr. Hayes, your husband.
Of him what?
I have not seen him. I heard he has returned from the army, but I have not seen him.
No wonder.
No wonder?
If he is on his way to Portugal, how could you see him?
How indeed? But Mrs. Hayes.
Yes?
So long he was in the army, then home to such a young and comely as you, then within 4 days he offs to Portugal.
Oh, restless John. My last words to him as he left.
Restless indeed. Huh. Would that my husband were restless like that, and off to Portugal. And a cooper like that Mr. Billings about. Some has all the lucky.
And Mrs. Martin shook her head sadly all the way to the cheese stalls. There, she selected a good round Edam and went home and told all the neighbors that John Hayes had hied off to Portugal. And neighbors told neighbors, and everybody was satisfied. For a week. For it was a week later that Mrs. Martin went down to London on a visit to a friend. It was an infrequent trip for Mrs. Martin, and her friend took her around to show her the sights. The finest statuary, the best inns, and on a Sunday afternoon, he took her to see a head, which had been encapsulated by Dom Llewellyn, and which was on exhibition at the Constabulary Museum. And seeing it, Mrs. Martin said this.
Why, I do believe I know that man.
And her friend took her to the sheriff, to whom she repeated herself.
Why, I do believe I know that man.
What man?
Why, the man in that room there. The one whose head's in the glass.
You know him, you say?
Did he?
You're certain?
Did he? Did he do?
Who is he?
A neighbor to me. Husband to a young lass. Poor lass.
Ah?
Poor lass, barely 17, I'd say. And her husband dead in such a way.
Who is she? What's her name?
Catherine. Catherine Hayes. And he who you've got, like you've got, is her hubby dear, John Hayes.
I be confused, I be.
How?
What's he doing in that room, like he is, when he's in Portugal?
What's he doing there, indeed? Madam.
Aye?
Will you take me to your neighbor?
Didi? Didi, I will.
What say you, Katie? Oh,
settle it between you.
Listen to me, alehouse man. I'd as soon slit your gullet as look at you. And I'll do it if you don't leave us alone.
Talking. It's all you're good at, Billings. Come to me so I can let the air out of you with a knife.
Oh,
settle it between you. Yes, who be you?
Sheriff of London Town.
For what?
If you'll be Mrs. John Hayes, I come to take you with me.
For what?
To show you of your husband, if he be the one whose head we have.
Head?
Aye. And madam?
Aye?
The two men I espy over your shoulder, may I inquire of their worth?
Friends to me.
And your husband?
I would say so.
We will all ride down to London Town. And now, Mr. Wood, I will show you a thing. Come with me. Look, you. Who is this man whose head is in this glass?
I do not know.
Who is this man?
I do not know. I swear it. I am a pious man. When I swear a thing, it is sworn to. And it is the truth.
Very well. Sit there. Mr. Billings? Close the door, please. Walk to that table, Mr. Billings, and tell me whose head it is encased there. Mr. Billings?
Aye.
What have you done with the rest of Mr. Hayes?
Mr. Hayes?
Did you put an axe in such a way as to sever his head?
Me?
You?
No.
Very well. Sit there. Mrs. Hayes, please. Is that your husband's head who is on the table?
No.
You are not looking at the head, Mrs. Hayes.
Nor do I need to. For my beloved husband, my strength and my love is in Portugal.
Mrs. Hayes.
What?
Will you look at the head, please?
I will not.
I will bring it to you so you can see.
Do not.
For what reason?
Do not. Do not. Do not. Do not. How can it be my hubby love John when he isn't?
Pretend, Mrs. Hayes. Pretend he is not in Portugal, and so pretending, tell me, is this your husband?
No.
Are you sure?
It is not my husband.
Perhaps you need a better look.
No, no, it is not John, not him.
I hold him by the hair and close to you. Now tell me.
John. John, hubby love.
Your husband?
Yes. Yes, oh, yes.
And how got he here?
They did it. Billings and Wood.
Say, liar!
No shame and no lies. You, the two of you evil men, killed him and severed his head.
Aye, while you fetched a pail to catch his head.
And laughed as you caught it.
In the name of his majesty, I charge the three of you.
Charge them, not me.
The three of you.
And the three of them were tried. Billings and Wood on the charge of murder. Catherine on the charge of petty treason, which was 18th century talk for killing one's husband. All were found guilty. Wood died in jail. Billings was hung in chains. And Catherine? Let me read to you from a journal of the times concerning Catherine. An iron chain was placed about her body and fixed to a stake. On these occasions, when women were burned for petty treason, it was customary to strangle them by means of a rope passed round the neck and pulled by the executioner, so that they were dead before the flames reached the body. But the flames leaped so high that the executioner burned his hands, so that he could not strangle, so that Catherine Hayes was burned alive. It is interesting to note that a graph of petty treason in England for a whole year after that shows a decided drop, before it picks up again. In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. John Hayes, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Betty Harford was heard as Catherine, Jeanette Nolan as Mrs. Martin, and Alastair Duncan as John Hayes. Featured in the cast were Ben Wright, Richard Peel, Charles Davis, and William Johnstone. Bob Lamond speaking. Here again is Thomas Highland. Next week, Mahadwat, India, in the year 1894. We will concern ourselves with a father and son who just didn't get along, to the point where one of them had to go. My report to you will be on Rashi among the crocodiles and the prank he played. Thank you. Good night.
From the stars of old Vienna to Rodgers and Hammerstein, hear a cavalcade of musical treats illustrating how easy it is to become stage-struck the Broadway musical way, with Guy Bolton and P.G. Wodehouse as guides. Hear the evolution of musical comedy with a host of stars Friday night.
when CBS Radio presents Stage Struck. Lionel Barrymore's Radio Hall of Fame is great Sunday night drama on the CBS Radio Network.
That's Crime Classics, October 28th, 1953. John Hayes, His Head and How They Were Parted, starring Lou Merrill.